Less than a quarter of an hour before Martin Snell discovered the crime scene, he was delivering milk. He'd already completed his rounds in two of the three Springburns, Greater and Middle, and he was on his way to Lesser Springburn, cruising along Water Street in his blue and white milk float, enjoying his favourite part of the route. Water Street was the narrow country lane that kept the villages of Middle and Lesser Springburn detached from Greater Springburn, the market town. The lane wound between tawny ragstone walls, bypassing apple orchards and fields of rape. It dipped and climbed with the undulations of the land it bisected, overhung by ash trees, limes and alders, whose leaves were finally beginning to unfold in a springtime arc of green. The day was glorious. No rain and no clouds. Just a breeze from the east, a milky blue sky, and the sun winking in reflection against the oval picture frame that swung on a silver chain from the milk float's rear-view mirror. "Quite a day, Majesty," Martin said to the photograph. "Beautiful morning, don't you think? Hear that now. It's the cuckoo again. And there, oh, one of them larks is going off now as well. Lovely sound, innit? Sound of spring, it is." Martin's habit had long been to chat companionably with his photograph of the Queen. He saw nothing odd in this. She was the country's monarch, and as far as he was concerned, no one was likely to appreciate England's beauty more than the woman who sat on its throne. Their daily discussions encompassed more than an evaluation of flora and fauna, however. The Queen was Martin's companion of the heart, the recipient of his deepest thoughts. What he liked about her was that, despite her noble birth, she was a decidedly friendly woman. Unlike his wife, who had been born again with a pious vengeance at the hands of a Bible-wielding cement maker some 5 years back, the Queen never fell to her knees in prayer in the midst of one of his bumbling attempts at communication. Unlike his son, who was given to the secretive silences of the 17-year-old with copulation and complexion weighing equally on his mind, she never rebuffed one of Martin's approaches. She always leaned forward slightly and smiled with encouragement, one hand raised to wave from the coach as she was driven eternally to her coronation. Of course, Martin didn't tell the Queen everything. She knew about Lee's devotion to the Church of the Reborn and Saved. He'd described at great length and more than once the spanner that religion had put into the works of his once jovial dinner hours. And she knew about Danny's job at Tesco's, where he kept the shelves stocked with everything from peas to dried beans, and about the girl from the tea shop that the boy was so wild about. With his skin going hot, Martin had even disclosed to the Queen, only last week, his belated attempt at explaining the facts of life to his son. How she had chuckled, how Martin had been forced to chuckle as well, at the thought of him pawing through the second-hand books in Greater Springburn, looking for something to do with biology, and coming up with a diagram of frogs instead. He'd presented this to his son along with a packet of condoms he'd had in his chest of drawers since approximately 1972. "These'll do for conversation starters," he'd thought. "What are the frogs for, Dad?" would lead inescapably to a revelation of what his own father had mysteriously called the marital embrace. Not that he and the Queen discussed marital embraces as such. Martin had far too much respect for Her Majesty to do anything more than hint at the topic and then move on. But for the last 4 weeks, their milk route conversations had petered off at the high point of Water Street, where the countryside stretched to the east in hop fields and fell to the west in a grass-covered slope that dropped to a spring where watercress grew. Here, Martin had taken to pulling the milk float onto the narrow strip of pigweed that served as verge, in order to spend a few minutes in quiet contemplation. This morning he did no differently. He let the engine idle. He gazed at the hop fields. The poles had been up for more than a month, row upon row of slim chestnuts, some 20 feet tall, from which strings crisscrossed to the ground below. The strings made a diamond-paned lattice, up which the hops would eventually grow,